Thanks for listening to the New Life Church Searcy podcast. We're glad that you're joining us today. You're about to hear message audio from one of our weekend services, but before you do, just want to remind you, you can tap the link in the description or text Searcy to 88,000 to get connected and stay up to date with what's going on our campus at all times. You can give online, join a life group, or find more information about joining a serve team as well. You can also request prayer. We love praying for the needs of our church every single week. If you have a prayer request, tap the link in the description or again, text Searcy to 88,000 for more information.
Amen. Let me see your Bibles today. Okay, if you got one, hold it up. Amen. So if you haven't been with us, I've been encouraging our church to bring your physical Bible. And just so that we can have this time to be unplugged and disconnected. And so I encourage you to do that. If you do not have access to one, we want to buy you one. And so you can reach out. I believe we have a QR code on the screen now. And if you'll just scan that, we will get you a Bible this week, okay, and get it to you. So very special announcement. Today is my wife's birthday. That's right. And so she is full 30. And so I'm thankful for her. And I actually told her she could take today and sleep in and just kind of do her own thing. And she didn't want to. She said, you know what I want above all? I want to hear you preach for the 8,000th time in our marriage. I want to hear you today. And so she's here. But anyway, the truth be known, I say this anytime I get the chance. But if I've done anything good in my life as an adult, it's because of her. And so anything that if you can say, man, Kevin, you've done well at that, it's because of who I'm married to. And so such an encourager, and she is my person, and the Lord smiled upon me. And so I just wish her the best day today. I sure love you. This week is week 6 in a series that we have been doing in the book of Mark. So if you're just tuning in, we've been here for a while. And we took just one break to have Pastor Kent Job speak to us. What a phenomenal job that he did. And but this is week 6 in our series. So far, we have learned from a leper and a woman with a blood disorder, a man who has been lowered through the roof. And last week, we talked about a young man who walked away from Christ because he really struggled to make space in his life for generosity. So Christ said, take all you have, give it to the poor, and then come and follow me. And it says that he walked away sad. And so today we are going to look at what I'm going to call a drive-by text. And the reason we call those things a drive-by text is because we originally look at them and they don't feel like they have a lot of bite to them. They are not as exciting as miracles and ministry, but they pack a lot of truth. And so these 10 verses are often overlooked. And the primary characters today are two brothers. They are James and John, and they are nicknamed the Sons of Thunder. They are called this because they were a WWE tag team of biblical days. I'm just kidding there if you're new to Christianity. They are called this because they are quick-tempered. And so their demeanor, they carry this nickname, Sons of Thunder. To give you an example, in Luke chapter 9, Jesus was on his way to speak to the Samaritans, and he sent a group ahead of him to kind of prepare them. And they were not welcoming at all, just because the Samaritans and the Jews did not get along well. And so James and John asked the question, do you want us to just call fire down on them? Okay, they were so put out that they were asking Jesus, why don't we just pray fire down and just consume them? So they had a little bit of an anger issue. And so they had been professional fishermen at one point, and I knew a professional fisherman once, and all he wanted was a Red Bull and a bologna sandwich and for you to stop talking to him, okay? And so his name's Drew Friday, and so we know how those professional fishermen can act. And but today, let's go to Mark 10, and let's look at this very overlooked text, and let's try to unpack this just a little bit. So Mark chapter 10, 35 through 45. And James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came up to him, being Jesus, and said, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And he said to them, "What do you want me to do for you?" And they said to him, "Grant us to sit one at your right hand and one at your left in your glory." And Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, or to be baptized with the baptism with which I'm baptized?" And they said to him, "We're able." And Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you will drink. And with the baptism with which I'm baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or at my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those to whom it has been prepared." And when the 10 heard it, that means the other disciples, they began to be indignant at James and John. And Jesus called them to him and said to them, "You know that those who are considered rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. But it shall not be so among you. But whoever would be great among you must be your servant." Verse 44. "And whoever would be first among you must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life," I love this word, "as a ransom for many." So we get a sneak peek here into some real talk. We get a sneak peek into the ideas and the mentality of what's happening among the 12 and what they are thinking about. And I want to give you just a little bit of context, because at this point, all the disciples have heard and seen enough to know that what they have found in Jesus is remarkable. They know that this friend they have made is unlike any other person they have ever met. To put it in a concise statement, they are friends with God. And what they know from the Torah is that God is all-powerful and all-knowing and unlimited in every area. And they understand God's ability is the polar opposite of their own, which is very limited. For some of the disciples, they see their friendship with God as an opportunity to learn, to grow, to change and help change the lives of other people. For some, they see it as an impact or as an opportunity to make an impact on their immediate families and their community with which they live life with. There has not been a faith leader carry this much impact in a culture since Moses. But for James and John, they see their friendship, as we find in these 10 very quick, overseen, driven by verses. They see their friendship with God as an opportunity for personal progress. Like, how can I get ahead? Again, verse 35, "We want you to do for us whatever we ask." And I want us to think for a moment about the questions that you and I ask of other people where there is potential benefit for ourselves. You might ask your boss, "Can I have a raise?" You ask your friend, "Can you help me move?" You ask your spouse, "Can you be nice?" You ask your children, "Can you clean your room?" You might ask a parent, "Can I borrow some money?" You ask the government, "Can you lower taxes?" You ask your dentist, "Can I have the gas, man?" Okay? These are all questions that come with a motive, and the motive is to better your life. And this is what these two come to Jesus with. "We've seen you. We know that you're remarkable. There's something special here between us. We are two of 12 people that you have isolated, that we live life with you. We've seen what your words can do and what your hand can do, and we've seen the purity of your heart, and we've seen this incredible knowledge that you have of God and eternity and what's going to happen in the future, and we're tied to that. And so what we want a favor. We want to ask you something, and I think for James and John, our curiosity this morning should not be reserved just for their question, but the conversation that happened before their question was ever asked. For example, what did these two guys whisper to each other in quiet times? What selfish thoughts have they shared with each other? What are they conspiring? At what point did they say, we should go talk to him about this? They were plotting on how to get ahead of the other disciples, ahead in eternity, and ahead in their own minds even, that they would be Christ's favorites, right? I mean, if he would say yes to this, then we can go tell the others that we have a sure spot of when we get to glory, I'm going to be on one side of Jesus and my brother is going to be on the other side of Jesus. This would concretize our place with Jesus and eternity. It would be amazing. Can't you do this for us? This is a huge display of ego. I mean, Sigmund Freud would have been so pleased with what he saw in them. James and John, what do you really want? Do you want to be seen? Do you want to be important? Do you want to be elevated? Do you want to be worshipped? What inner need are you wanting met? Have we ever done this ourselves? Has the tone of our heart ever gone to Christ and said, I want you to do for me what I ask? I just want you to think about that for just a second. Just let your mind's theater play for a moment about your life and think about your tone and your words. Have you ever gone before the Father and just said this with this tone, I want you to do for me whatever I ask? Have you ever treated deity, our Savior, as a genie or a Santa Claus or a wishing well? What do they want? So in verse 36, Jesus says, what do you want me to do for you? I love this. I think it shows his heart because I think he already knows. But he's gonna play along with them. What do you want me to do for you? Verse 37, let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in glory. Verse 38, you don't know what you're asking. Right? Jesus is saying, you don't even know what you don't know. You don't know what lies around this corner. You don't know what is about to transpire. This ends up being repeated when this kind of you don't even know what you don't know shows up in Luke's gospel when Jesus prays over the crowd and says, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. It was a sense of ignorance, like you're not seeing the whole picture, therefore you look foolish, you look ignorant, because you're wanting a favor, you're wanting to be elevated, you're wanting to be worshipped, you're wanting to be needed, you're wanting to be important. They think that their happiness is going to be fulfilled if they sit next to Christ rather than to just be satisfied with being of Christ. Like it's just, I just need to know you and be with you and be just taken over by you. I want to love you and just spend it. That wasn't enough for them. I want to be right next to you. C.S. Lewis wrote this great quote once. He said, human history is the long, terrible story of man trying to find something other than God which will make him happy. This is a great reflection of that quote. Like, what else can I find? I mean, I feel like I'm in relationship with you, but what I want you to do, I want you to do something for me. I want you to do whatever I ask of you. And asking of God requires the right spirit. We cannot forget this morning that God sees right through us. He sees through our motive. He sees through our agenda. He sees through all of it. James goes on and writes a gospel, and in chapter 4 of that gospel, he writes this, James 4 and 3. I want you to pay attention to this verse I'm about to read because it is very explanatory of our culture, at least a contributor of it. What causes quarrels and fights among you? Is it not this, that your desires are at war within you? Like, you got multiple desires and they're at war. They all want more. They want to be prioritized. You want what you want and when you want it. And just because you're aging does not mean you're maturing. And so he says, you have desires that are at war within you. Verse 2, you desire and you do not have. So you murder. You covet, but don't get what you want. So you fight and you quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. And you ask and do not receive because you ask with the wrong motive. The King James Version says, because you ask and you ask amiss. Like, you're asking, but you're asking from the wrong motive. We want you to do for us whatever we ask of you. It's a terrible motive. When we are ignorant of the full picture, we come off as ignorant. Have you ever said to somebody, you're embarrassing yourself? You may have said that to yourself. Something's going on and you've got a close friend and you feel embarrassed for them and you're like, man, you're really making a fool out of yourself. Have you ever seen someone become their own worst enemy? Like, they do something and they keep doing it and they're sabotaging themselves over and over and over again? This is because they don't see the full picture and they reveal how ignorant they are to it by their behavior. This is how James and John appear to you and I this morning as the reader. How can you ask of this? I mean, you're a friend of God. He's changed your life. He's transformed you. Of course, we see the end story. We know that they're going to go on and plant churches and do miracles and be full of the Spirit and live a life that many, many, many do not live. They'll also die the way that many, many don't. And so Jesus is about to teach them how to shift from wanting to be known to knowing the right answer. He says, can you drink the cup that I drink? Can you be baptized with the baptism that I'm baptized with? The point here is this. He was telling them, you cannot have the crown without the cross. Like, you can't just... This isn't the way this is going to work. Yes, I'm your friend. Yes, I love you. Yes, I've got a plan for you. But you're asking terrible questions. Then he breaks the bad news. And this is so mysterious, you can't even really preach it. But I'm going to share it with you anyway. He says, to sit next to me is not for me to grant. And then he gives this little mystery line. These places belong to those whom they have been prepared. That's it. He moves on. We don't know anything else about it. But pride loves a platform. Pride loves a platform. When I want something, it stands up on a platform and it almost preaches, to use myself as an example. Pride wants the lights and the likes and the attention, and it wants to demand something. It thinks that there's something in you that's worthy of it, and it wants a platform to be elevated, to be prioritized. And what is said in private oftentimes does not remain there. Verse 41 is a great indicator of this. When the 10 heard about this, okay? So they have a conversation with Jesus, just the three of them, and the 10 hear about it. Now, in another gospel, I believe it's Matthew, this story is actually told differently. It says that James and John's mom went and asked for them. Now, I like to think about that one, because I like to think about James and John going, "Mom, will you talk to Jesus for us?" And she does. She says, "Will you let one of my sons sit on your left and one of them sit on your right?" So we don't know. We don't know if mom told the 10. We don't know if James and John were upset and told the 10. We don't know what happened, but they found out. And it says, and when they found out, they became indignant. I love this word, but it really stands to as they were annoyed. They were resentful. I resent you for going to him and talking to him. And here's what's funny is because just one chapter over, they were all arguing about who was the greatest. Who's the best one among us? Who's the best? And who's going to do this and who's going to do that? And then James and John are like, I think we should just go ahead and go talk to Jesus, get this thing squared up. You know what I mean? And so they beat everybody to the punch of getting to go ahead and ask Jesus for a favor. It is so arrogant and so full of ego. And so the other 10 are upset and they're like, you two are so sneaky. Man, you two are selfish. You guys want to be Michael Jordan and you want us to be Scottie Pippen. Okay? You want to be Ronald Reagan and you want us to be Oliver North. Okay, that's for my 80s people. Y'all, sadly, I talked to a girl this week from Central, and she did not know what Miami Vice was. It's very, very sad. I realized I was dealing with a new generation, one who did not know God. And when she acted puzzled at my Miami Vice statement, I said, you know, Don Johnson, suits with no socks, you know, Ferraris, powerboats, reggae music. No, she didn't know anything. When we hung up, I blocked her on my phone. I was like, don't even come around anymore. So these 10 are upset, and I love what Jesus does because he begins to take this as a teaching opportunity. Rather than rebuke them, he calls them all together in verse 42. He says, hey, let's go ahead and take care of this. And he gets them all together. I mean, we're getting an inside look at what a real day is like as a disciple. He calls them together and he uses the government as an example. He says, hey, the government around us, just look at it, okay? He reminds them that rulers have to lord over other people and that rulers have to use authority. And his solution for them is more of a statement. In verse 43, he says, not so with you. Okay, now this is very important because he is trying to set a precedent to say that our church, what we're building, is not going to be like the governments of man. It's not going to be like what you think it should be from your own desires, from your pride. Not so with you. In other words, he's saying, don't let this happen. Don't let your desires lead the way of what you're about to lead and build and plant and establish and preach. Don't let that come from a place of pride. Not so with you. He says, whoever wants to be great among you must be a servant. And whoever wants to be first must be a slave to all. And he lowers them. He tells them, if you want to be lifted up, you better get down. If you want to be elevated, if you want to be used, if you want my spirit to remain on you, then you better understand what it means to be humble. And some Christians really have a problem. And I know I preach a lot about Western culture, and I can't apologize for that. It's how we live, and it shapes us. But some of us cannot get out of it enough to see how it affects us. So we have a really big problem understanding what it means to be servant to all. So let me try and help you just a little bit with this. Instruction does not necessarily mean restriction. Like some people say, I can't follow God because then it means I can't do anything. It means I can't have fun. It means I can't have a good time. It means I can't ever, you know, be an expert in my field, or I can't be wealthy, or I can't be this or that. That's not true. Just because you have instruction does not mean you have restriction. Being a follower of Christ does not mean you have to be a doormat. It doesn't mean that you can't pursue great things and be wealthy or an expert. Servant to all does not mean that you're signing up to be abused or become a victim. Servant to all is a posture. Servant to all is a let me help you. Servant to all is how can I pray with you? How can our church make your life better? How can we as believers come around each other and find strength in that? And some people have confused, stay with me, if you hear one thing today, walk out with this. Some people have confused servant leadership with customer service. So they want their church to be full of customer service rather than servant leadership. And so you're not looking for a church, you're looking for a Chick-fil-A. Hello. It's like, I came to the church and nobody is my friend. Have you been a friend? Solomon says to have a friend, you must show yourself friendly. Have you been a friend? No one shook my hand. Have you shaken hands? No one introduced them. Did you introduce yourself to somebody? I think what you're looking for is someone to say, can we put mayonnaise or mustard on that? And that's Chick-fil-A. A church is a group of people who come together and find strength in what each other bring. It's not 80% looking at 20% saying, how can that 20% be sure to park me and sign me in and pour me a cup of coffee and make sure I've got a good seat and make sure the music isn't loud and make sure the temper, that's customer service. Hello. Okay. What we have to do is serve each other. This happened in Acts. I have two chairs, you have no chair. I will give you a chair. This is nothing about mayonnaise and mustard. This is us serving each other and making each other stronger and better because of our resource and vision and the spiritual giftedness on our lives. Stop being offended at silly, frivolous things. Get off milk, get onto the meat. Let's grow up and do something for God in the world today. Okay. Again, my email address is cwoodson@newlifechurch. That's a C. C. Woodson. Craig Groeschel said this recently to his church, and I loved it. He said, I want you to hear that God did not call you to be important. And it's true. He said, I want every one of you to understand God did not call you to be important. He called us to serve each other. But I'm not your doormat, and you aren't mine. But we're here to serve each other. And if that ever gets out of balance, you get into becoming an unhealthy church. When we think we're a big deal, we're tempted to treat people like garbage and try to worship God at the same time. Verse 45, he says this, even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom. Again, that word ransom, I love it, because a ransom is paid when someone is held captive. So he said, I've come to be a ransom. I've come to take what is now in bondage and is held and it's been restrained, and I've come to give my life as a ransom for that and rescue you. The Bible goes on to say you were bought with a price. So let me end with this. They wanted a throne to sit on. I believe James and John are good people. I believe they love the Lord. I believe what they saw in him was remarkable. They obviously go on to do incredible things, but they had a moment where they look ignorant. I want to end today. I'm going to give you, in 60 seconds, I'm going to give you four thrones that are always going to be a temptation for you to establish in your life. You're always, 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 no matter what age, you're always going to be tempted to establish this throne in your life. Here they are. We're going to be tempted to establish a throne of religious hurt. And this can be aimed at anybody, a pastor, a church, the Father, the Spirit, Jesus. And religious hurt, the voice here behind it is God owes me. You owe me. I was going to church and someone hurt me. I was going to church and someone left me. I was going to church and someone lied to me. I was going to church and this happened, and now I'm hurt. And I want to sit on that throne, and I want to establish it in my life. It is religious hurt, and it is rampant. The second big throne that's going to be a temptation for you is anger, a throne of anger. And anger says this: you owe me. You hurt me. You did it. You're the one who divorced me. You're the one that lied to me. You're the one that did. You put me in this position. You let me go. You made that decision, and that decision hurt me. And now I'm mad about it, and you owe me. And we establish that as a throne. God, I want you to do whatever I ask, and I want to establish this throne in my life, and I'm going to live my life from that. You owe me. Pride is I owe me. We look at our life and we go, I deserve this. I've put the work in. I'm the one who's lived right. I'm the one that didn't take shortcuts. I owe me. And you want to establish that as a throne. Then there are people who, through terrible events, and I don't want to lighten this up, but you have become a victim in something. But when you stay in victim mentality, you sit on a throne that says, life owes me. Everybody around me, everybody I come in contact, my family owes me, my children owe me, my spouse owes me, my boss owes me, my friends, they all owe me because I'm a victim. This happened to me, and I'm going to establish this throne in my life. We need to get this fixed in our life in a place of, God, heal my anger. God, heal my religious hurt. God, take this pride. We need to continue to turn this over and over and over to God. Don't ever go to him and say, I want to ask you something and I want you to elevate me, okay? Here's the biggest takeaway I have for you today, and then I'm closing. Don't pray to God to elevate you. You worry about the depth of knowing God, and let him worry about the width of how to expand you. Okay? You just get to know him, love him, be with him, and he will expand your tents. He will pull up the tent stakes and expand that in your life. You let him worry about the expansion. You worry about the depth in him, okay? I want you to bow your heads with me this morning, and I want to talk to your heart for a second.